A note to listeners before we begin. Today's story deals with extremely violent, gory, and disturbing subject matter. Listener discretion is advised. Previously on the original Dead Time Stories, we met Edward Gein, the real-life inspiration for Norman Bates of Psycho fame. Like Norman, Ed was incredibly fond of his mother. As of now, he seems like a nice man who usually keeps to himself in a house full of hoarded garbage. Neighborhood kids do enjoy spending time with the meek man, and several have started spreading the rumor around town that he's collecting shrunken heads.
Oh, you silly boy! There are no such things as shrunken heads. Honestly, the stories you children invent. Oof.
Though most of the adults in town find Ed to be a quiet little man, some find him extremely odd and enjoy making fun of him.
Hey, you pay Eddie the rent you owe him for the land he gave you?
Sure haven't, but he probably hasn't even noticed. He can't see behind that saggy eyelid of his.
About a year and a half had gone by since Ed's mother, Augusta Gein, had passed away. But little Georgia Jean Weckler probably had no idea about this. All she cared about was getting home from school.
Oh, I hate it when it rains and Daddy has to drop me off. Now I have no way to get home. But at least the rain makes the air smell pretty. And rain means the flowers will be even bigger bloom. Now I can pick some for my May Day basket. Oh, hello there, Georgia. Are you waiting for your mother?
Hi, Mrs. Thomas. Mama can't pick me up. I was gonna walk home, but my brother and sister got out of class.
I'm taking Jimmy home and you're on the way. Why don't you hop in so you don't have to wait?
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Thomas. Mrs. Thomas!
Oh, of course, sweetie. Now you be careful when you're out collecting the flowers for your basket.
I will! Nothing but bills, bills, bills in the post, as Mommy always says.
Little Georgia Weckler never made it up her half-mile driveway that day. When her mother got home, she wasn't too concerned because she just assumed her daughter was with her husband. But when he returned home at 6 that evening without Georgia, the family panicked and went out looking for the little girl. They'd never find her. Welcome to the original Dead Time Stories, a podcast where I, Skylar Fastenow, go beyond the crime to investigate human psychology and history, so maybe we don't make the same mistakes of our ancestors. If you're a fan of the show and you want to support us, head on over to patreon.com/OGDeadTime. We will continue our chapter on Ed Gein after these messages. And now, on with our show.
Eddie! Eddie, you awake, buddy? Hi, Eddie.
What is it, Elmo?
You haven't heard the news yet, huh? Mary Hogan's missing.
Oh?
Eddie, if you had spent more time courting Mary, she'd be cooking for you instead of being missing.
Sleepy Ed managed to roll his eyes, then grinned.
She's not missing. She's down at the house now.
Oh, stop kidding around, Eddie. Say, I got a job for you. You think you can run into town and pick up some tools for me from Warden's?
I sure can. Tell me what you need.
Okay, so Elmo may not have asked Ed to go to Warden's that day, but I needed a nice little transition. The facts were these. Ed had gone into Warden's on November 15th, 1957 to ask about the price of antifreeze. That's when he ran into the owner's son, Frank, and asked if he'd be deer hunting the next day.
You deer hunting tomorrow?
Frank nodded because deer hunting season was open and the town was stoked. Ed returned home without buying any of the antifreeze, but went in again the following day.
Ooh. Hi, Eddie.
She clearly wasn't a fan of the strange little man, and probably because recently he'd been dropping in more and more to pester her. Was it flirting? Was he just lonely? Who knew? But Bernice was fully over the buffoon.
Decided to get that antifreeze?
Uh-huh. And, can I see that gun right there? I want to trade in some of my other ones.
Yeah, sure. Let me write up your bill and I'll get it down.
Bernice walked to the shop's front window and casually peered out.
I see Bud has a new car. I do not like Chevrolets.
Across the street from Warden's sat a gas station run by Mr. Bernard Machinsky. While waiting for the rush of hunters to come back from the woods, Bernard was surprised when he saw the Warden hardware van zipping away from their building.
Probably decided to close up early.
He sat back down in his chair and closed his eyes until the hunters returned.
Bernard. Hey, Bernard.
Oh, Frank, you scared me. Oh. Hey, did Bernice change her mind and go hunting with you?
Shh. What?
Saw a guy driving the Warden van this morning and thought y'all decided to close up the store.
No. She was gonna keep it open all weekend.
Frank peered through his mother's store window and frowned.
Damn. That'll be blood on the ground. And the cash register's gone. Call the sheriff.
Frank impatiently paced across the store's linoleum flooring as Sheriff Arthur Schley entered.
He's done something to her.
Whoa. Slow down, son. Who's done something to your mom?
Ed Keene. He was in here bugging her yesterday. And look at this sales receipt.
Half a gallon of antifreeze for Mr. Edward Keene. $1. Change owed, 15 cents. I see. Let's pay Eddie Keene a visit. See what he's been up to this morning.
By 7 o'clock that evening, officers from all over the county had arrived to track down the suspected killer. They found him, of all places, in his car at a neighbor's.
Hey, Ed. Can we talk to you?
I'm waiting to take Bob into town, but, sure.
Can you tell me what you've been up to today? We're trying to find Bernice Worden, and you were at her store this morning.
Ed recited his day two times for the officer, but...
You changed some key parts of your story, Ed.
Somebody framed me for Bernice's murder.
Nobody said she was dead, Eddie.
Well, I heard it from someone earlier that she was. That's all.
Ed was promptly arrested for suspicion of murder. While Ed was rushed off to the jailhouse, Sheriff Schley, along with Captain Shoeforster, say those names 10 times fast, carefully made their way through Ed's creepy farmhouse.
I don't trust this guy, Schley. Who tar papers up their windows?
Yeah, the same guy who never wired his home for electricity. It's the 50s. How's he gonna watch Lucille Ball? Hey, can you hold that lamp a little closer?
Sure.
I guess he's more into big-breasted Nazi officers than Lucy, huh?
Not surprised. He loved telling me about the murders he read in his true crime magazines. What a nut. Come on. Let's see if we can find Mrs. Warden.
The officers continued through the small, closed-up home. Arthur Schley crept into the kitchen and...
Whoa. What's that?
He turned, and as his candlelight shined across the room, he felt his stomach lurch.
My God. There she is.
There, hanging by her ankles, was Bernice Warden. Much like the pigs in Ed's parents' slaughterhouse growing up, Bernice had been decapitated and sliced open so the blood could freely flow from her body. Arthur tumbled out of the house.
I've never seen something so gruesome in all my time doing this. Get the rest of the boys. We need help going through that hell house.
Generators were brought in so the team could fully see what they were up against. And it was horrifying.
How does such a sweet little guy have all this? Bowls made out of human skulls? 4 chairs upholstered with flesh? Lampshades made out of skin, too.
If I venture to guess, I'd say Ilsa Koch inspired this sick monster.
Good God! There's more here! Look at this belt! Women's nipples all over. Ugh! I'm afraid to ask what's in this shoebox. Ugh! Vaginas! 9 of them!
What's with the little red ribbon on that one? And my word, did he paint it silver?
He sure did. And I'm afraid to ask why.
See if the paint preserved it better than salt? That's what he put on this one. Salt.
Schley! Schuforster! I got something else over here.
Do we want to know?
Skin. Lots and lots more skin. But it's sewn together to make clothes. You got legs you can wear, and this vest could be thrown over your body.
It's got breasts.
Sure does. I always said growing up that Eddie Gein was a girly girl. Looks like he wanted to become a dolly himself. Sicko.
And I'm guessing these.
Captain Schuforster pointed to the wall.
Were the masks he wore to complete the transformation. Maybe the kid's stories weren't so silly after all.
They look like trophies, the way he strung them up on the wall. Poor girls. Look! This one still has her lipstick on. Oh, what else has he been hiding in here all these years?
What's this?
Officer Fritz picked up a robe made from horse skin and coughed as he unfolded the dusty thing.
Should I open this paper bag or pretend we never saw it?
Can't be any worse than what we've already seen here tonight.
Ugh. Another dried up face, but this hair looks familiar.
In a daze, Officer Fritz held it up to the light.
Ugh. I think we solved the mystery of Mary Hogan's disappearance.
Well, we know where he got these 2 women from. But my question is, where the hell did he find the rest? We've had a lot of missing men, women, and girls over the past decade, and I have a hunch Eddie Gein can tell us where they went.
Our story will continue after these brief messages. And now, back to the show. While the House of Horrors was being dug through, Sheriff Schley entered the prison, eager to hear Ed's confession.
What's the prisoner said?
Nothing yet, sir.
Nothing? You've got nothing to say, you little weasel?
Enraged, the sheriff shoved Ed up against the wall.
Sir!
I've been in your nest, bud. I've seen everything.
Sir, release him!
Yeah, we're back into your cell.
Ed fell into an even deeper silence after the assault. Once the sheriff left, Ed was interrogated for over 12 hours without an attorney present or even his rights read to him. Even with all that pressure, he never admitted a thing. Meanwhile, an autopsy on Bernice, whose head had been found stuffed between two mattresses on the Gein farm, proved she died within a minute-ish of being shot. The bullet, by the way, was still lodged in her brain. They weren't sure if Ed had sex with her body, but boy did the newspapers have a heyday with that wild story. Screaming headlines sprang up all across the country, and all eyes quickly turned to the small town of Plainfield. Exactly how many bodies were in the farmhouse? Was Edward Gein really a cannibal or necrophiliac?
Sheriff, the prisoner's ready to confess.
Well, it's about damn time.
It was Monday, November 18th, 1957, just 2 days since Bernice was slaughtered.
Hello again, Eddie. I hear you have something to tell me.
I killed Mrs. Warden. I didn't mean to. I went into the store and we talked. Don't remember what about. Probably deer hunting or something. I must have killed her somehow. I was in a daze and next thing I knew I was dragging her limp body into the car. I got scared and took the cash register too.
Do you remember what you did to the body after?
I strung her up in the house. I don't know why. Might have thought she was a deer I shot. I tried to keep it clean, so collected the blood in a pail and buried that outside.
Where is it buried?
By the outhouse. I can show you if you want.
We can go later, but I need to know. Did you consume any part of her?
I can't remember. But it was all on accident. Oh, I remember now. I was trying to see if my bullets would fit in the gun, and it accidentally went off.
Okay, Eddie, sure. But I'm a little confused where the other bodies came from. We found at least 10 human heads by now.
Oh, well, I didn't kill anyone else, as far as I know. But I did go to the cemeteries.
Cemeteries?
Yes, sir. I've been to the graveyard about 40 times. Dug up coffins maybe about 9 of those times. I wanted to dig more the other nights I went, but my mother would always say not to.
Your mother went with you?
No. But she was there, buried, a few plots over.
So your dead mother told you not to dig up the graves?
Oh, yes. She always says, Eddie, be a good boy. But what she doesn't understand is I have to dig them up.
Why?
I can bring the dead back to life.
Ed looked into the sheriff's eyes with the most sincere, deadpan look on his face. He truly believed he had this ability.
I'd open the caskets, take a few body parts or treasures, put them back in apple pie order.
Do you remember the names of the people that you went after?
Of course. I read their names in the obituaries. I love reading obituaries. It's fascinating to see how people died.
You know what? Let's go to your farmhouse. I want to see where you buried all this stuff.
The journalists swarmed after Ed and the sheriff to nose in on whatever secrets were hidden at the farm. Ed would later be charged with armed robbery, since there was $41 in the cash register. He also received first-degree murder of Bernice Warden. While Ed was learning William Belcher would be his lawyer, townsfolk were itching to tell newspapers how they personally survived attacks from Eddie. The sweet man was gone now, replaced by a monster. And the town's innocence was gone too. Children were reporting more nightmares, doors were now locking at night, and doctors were bombarded with reports of stomach issues, since people were convinced Ed had given them human meat cleverly disguised as venison. For the record, that was never proven.
Hiya, Ed. I'm William Belcher, your attorney.
Yes. I remember.
How are you holding up?
Well, I spent this morning and yesterday being interrogated again.
Oh? And how does that make you feel?
Really great. The interrogators were mighty swell guys. They never made me say anything I didn't want to, and it honestly helped me clear my mind.
What all did you tell them?
Nothing they didn't already know. I killed Bernice Warden and Mary Hogan, too.
And the grave robbing?
Oh, yes. I reminded them about that and how I'd skinned the bodies to make lady suits. I kind of miss walking around the house like a dolly.
Good, good. Keep that attitude up. I've decided to enter a plea of not guilty by reason of insanity.
That sounds great.
And they told me they officially cleared you of taking part in the disappearance of Georgia Weckler and anyone else who disappeared lately.
Okay. Do I get to leave here soon?
I'm gonna try, Eddie.
On Friday, November 22nd, Ed pled not guilty by reason of insanity. The judge ruled for a psychological evaluation before they could officially start the trial. So, Ed was sent to Central State Hospital for the criminally insane.
Don't touch me.
There, he was kept under the watchful eye of Dr. Edward Schubert.
Hiya, Doc.
Good afternoon, Ed. Before we start my tests, is there anything you'd like to talk about?
Yep. I had an epiphany.
Really? Tell me about it.
Well, I now know why I murdered people. It's because of my mother. She didn't deserve to die, you know.
Of course not.
And it was that woman's fault that she did.
What woman?
Smith's harlot. We went to his house to get some hay one day, and that wicked woman came running outside, screaming at us in her monster of a boyfriend. Boy, did she upset Mother. I think it caused her to have another stroke.
And that bothered you?
Yes. It's not fair that my sweet mother had to look at such sinful women and die. While Mary Hogan, a foul-mouthed former hooker, and Bernice Warden, who made her husband cheat on his girlfriend with her, were allowed to live. The women are where they belong now. What have you written about me, Doc?
Nothing to be concerned about, Eddie. Your lawyer will get the notes and the judge will tell you what you need to know. Now, let's do another IQ test.
Okie dokie.
Here are the notes I've taken on your client, William.
Ed's in good health at 141 pounds and 60 inches tall. Really? I didn't know he was that little.
Keep reading.
Ed complains about smelling a bad odor, which he has related to the smell of flesh. Though his IQ is low average, he has a good vocabulary and the ability to reason abstractly. He believes his life would be better if he'd never moved to Plainfield and he'd been allowed to marry a woman. Perhaps then the neighbors would have treated him better. We believe Edward Gein shows signs of schizophrenia and is therefore legally insane and unfit to stand trial. Well, that's the best news we've had all month, Doc. Think they'll pick apart the schizophrenic evaluation?
No, there's enough solid proof. Ed suffers from hallucinations and delusions, like when he believed he could hear his mother telling him to be good. He exhibits bizarre beliefs when he claimed he could raise the dead. And we all know he's been socially isolated his whole life, not to mention the inability to relate to any other people his own age and to take care of his hygiene. The judge surely won't be able to see it any other way.
The good doctor was right. On Monday, January 6th, 1958, after hearing testimonies from Dr. Schubert and psychiatry professors, Judge Bundy had no choice but to pronounce,
"Edward Gein is insane and unable to stand trial. I have no choice but to send him back to Central State Hospital for an undetermined amount of time. Should doctors find him fit to stand trial, he will."
The town was not pleased with this. Having known Ed all their lives, they believed that he was a cunning little man getting away with a serious crime. The surviving families of those Ed had grave robbed wanted their loved ones' items and bodies returned, or at the very least, money and damages. Frank Warden wanted to see his mother avenged, and when it was announced Ed's home was being auctioned off, everyone was in an uproar about the possibility of it becoming a tourist trap. As far as that last part goes, the town was relieved when the property mysteriously burned down the week of the auction. Everyone in town naturally assumed it was arson because, as you'll remember, there was no electrical wiring in the house, nor were there any thunderstorms that night. Fire Chief Frank Warden never found any suspects, though, and I don't think anyone in town was really that worried about it. When Ed's doctor told him about the fire, he shrugged.
"Just as well."
Ed Gein's life from here on out would be relatively calm, but he never fully faded out of the public's eye. In 1968, a decade after his first trial, he returned to the courtroom along with William Belter. He was now deemed fit to stand trial, where they once again said that he was not guilty by reason of insanity. The first part of his trial proved that he was guilty of murdering Bernice Warden, and the second half confirmed that he was schizophrenic, so didn't know what he was doing at the time of the murder. In the end, he was sent back to the hospital. In 1974, Ed once again emerged to tell the judge,
"I am now fully cured of my schizophrenia and fully competent, so there's no need for me to stay in this hospital."
Reporters thought that he seemed quite average. In fact, they were surprised that this short, quiet man was the monster that their parents had warned them about growing up. But the doctors knew better. If anything, his condition had worsened, so they weren't surprised when the judge denied Ed's petition to leave. Finally, on July 26, 1984, Ed Gein died from respiratory failure. He was tossed into an unmarked grave. We might not be able to see where he is today, but the curious snuck into the cemetery shortly after he was buried. It will come as no surprise that he was buried right beside his mother. Mother Knows Best Part 2 was written and narrated by me, Skylar Fastenow, and executive produced by Daniel Jones. Voice talent was provided by Taylor Shirdy, Daniel Jones, Jordan Catcher, Tamara Perry, Jeremy Staple, Jeanette Zosh, and Gabriel Rivers. Our theme music was written and performed by Tracy Zales, editing and sound design by Brian Campbell, and cover artwork by Catherine Fastenau. We're very pleased you joined us for another chapter of the original Dead Time Stories. You can tell us what you thought of the episode by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or follow our Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitter at The Original Dead Time Stories. Following our social media accounts also helps you stay up to date with the podcast and gives you extra info about today's story that we just didn't have time to cover. You can find the links to all of those in the episode description. There, you'll also find a link to our Patreon. Did you know our patrons get ad-free content, merchandise, and exclusive facts on the episodes with my director's commentaries? Well, now you do. Check it out today. And to those already on Patreon, thank you for supporting independent artists. Our road trip across America continues next week, and you might want to pay close attention to this one if you plan on going trick-or-treating. You might find a few good pieces of advice in it. Until then, stay safe out there. I don't want you to become the next chapter's topic on the original Dead Time Stories.